The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Daylight saving time begins. It's the annual ritual of springing forward, also meaning that we lose that hour of sleep. And this can leave some feeling sluggish and tired. And that's why sleep experts suggest preparing for the transition now.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, don't forget, you have to turn your clocks up. Easy way to remember it, spring forward, right? Fall back. That's what you do with your clocks. There's been a lot of talk about maybe doing away with daylight savings, saving time. I don't know. Good idea or bad idea? We can talk about that. How does sleep, how does moving the clocks affect your health? That's a big question, too. Coming up in just a moment, Dr. Lou Tartaglia is going to be stopping by. We've had him on in the past. Excellent expert when it comes to sleep. He wrote a book, too, called The Last Gift of the Magi that came out not too long ago. We'll talk about that. But do you wake up in the middle of the night? Do you sleep through the night? You have to get up to go to the bathroom and then can't fall back to sleep. Does stress keep you up? Yeah, it's tough. Don't be late for Mass this Sunday. Sunday, you're going to have to get out of bed an hour earlier just to get to Mass on time because we turn that clock up 1 hour. 70 million people that lost an hour. It's going to compound a problem that they're already having. A lot of people say, like, I just am not getting a good night's sleep right now. When you mess with the clocks, it takes me a while to get back on schedule. 40 million adults suffer from chronic sleep disorders. 40 million Americans. That's a lot. 20 to 30 million have intermittent sleep-related problems. Do you have a dog? Does your dog or cat sleep on you? Does it wake you up? I mean, some people don't let their dogs on their bed. Some people do. I think that's always a problem. How about the temperature of the room? What about light that's coming in? Well, we'll get into all of it. If you're having issues, as I said, you can join us. You can get in queue at 888-914-9149. Ask your question or share your concern. The average adult gets about 6.9 hours of sleep every night. How much is enough sleep to get? You know, they say that's slightly less than the 7 to 9 hours that's recommended by a lot of sleep experts. Maybe you need less, maybe you need more. I don't know. I'd like to be in that 7 to 9 window personally. They do also say that 3/4 of American adults said they frequently experience at least one symptom of a sleep problem in the past year. I don't know where sleep aids are. Melatonin, valerian, you know, the natural stuff, or the Ambiens or Lunestas. A lot of people are looking to sleep aids right now to get that good night's sleep. But does that get you into the deep sleep? Do you get into your REM, you know, or do you feel sluggish the next day? What about memory? There was, I think, one other stat I saw was this. 1/4 of American adults, 47 million, don't get the minimum amount of sleep. And they say they're not alert the next day. You know, and a lot of adults don't use anything to help them. But for those who do, they think alcohol is a good idea. That's a bad choice. If you have a cocktail to relax you, make you a little sleepy, glass of wine, that's going to mess with your sleep. Trust me. People think, oh, I'll just have a beer, I'll have a scotch, I'll have a whiskey, you know, I'll have a glass of wine. 9% use over-the-counter sleep aids, 7% say they use prescription medication. So I'm here just to help. I'm going to bring Dr. Lou Tartaglia on, and he can help you get a better feel for how you can get a good night's sleep. There are strategies, there are things you can do. How do you know if you're just, you know, life is changing or whether or not you have a real sleep problem? Like I said, I had a guest. I won't give his name out. He was on the air with me not too long ago, and he told me, Drew, I wake up every night. I'm awake between 2 o'clock and 5 o'clock every night. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, I could not do my job if I didn't sleep. I could not do my job. So join me right now to help you, and you can get in. 888-914-9149. We'll take calls throughout the hour. Is Dr. Lou Tartaglia, full-time sleep medicine specialist and a he's board certified in psychiatry and neurology as well, but he is very active and participates in all areas of clinical sleep medicine and clinical supervision there at the Toledo Sleep Disorder Center, Sleep Laboratory in Ohio. Doctor, welcome back. It's great to have you with me once again. Thanks for being here.
It's great to be here, Drew.
You know, this is a conversation you and I have frequently on the air. You know, we at least 2 times a year I try to address the issue. I was shocked by the person who told me he wakes up every night between 2 and 5. So let me start there, because insomnia is real. Some people have problems falling asleep and staying asleep. How do you discern whether or not, you know, you really have a sleep problem or, you know, the room's too hot or there's too much ambient light coming in or it's the stress of the day. I mean, is there something we can do to look at and say, hey, I really need to get help, or, you know, I just need to resolve these issues?
It's really so complicated that the best thing they can do is sit down and talk with somebody about it. So there's like three major problems that cause insomnia. One is restless leg syndrome. It's an inherited disorder. And it's associated with the urge to move your legs when you're trying to fall asleep. So problems falling asleep are often restless legs, or they're related to apnea at the sleep-wake interface. Just as you start to fall asleep, you start to suffocate a bit, and then your brain wakes you up to keep you from stopping breathing. And then true insomnia, where you have too much orexin on board, that's the molecule that wakes you up. Usually true insomnia starts in the middle of the night and or the end of the night, where the orexin level increases, and then you wake up and you can't fall back to sleep because you've got enough of this wake hormone to keep you awake. And then what happens is it progresses to where you start to have trouble falling asleep. So there's like three major problems here: restless legs, apnea at the sleep-wake interface, and true insomnia. And it takes a kind of a intense sleep history to kind of figure out which one is going on. Right. And then sometimes we can't figure it out until we do a sleep study.
Yeah. Well, I would recommend anyone who's having these problems get that sleep study, because I know it plays lack of sleep. It doesn't just affect your mental health, right? It affects your physiology in general. What is the problem with disrupted sleep or not getting enough sleep, doctor? What are the byproducts of that?
Well, you know, there's an increase in cardiovascular disease, which is the major problem, which implies an increase in heart disease, cardiac arrhythmias, and stroke. So you want to make sure that you're getting good sleep. And then disruptive sleep for some people causes cognitive function decline, so that they start to have trouble with their memory and their concentration during the day.
That's interesting. What about turning the clocks up and back? Your thoughts on that? Is that an issue?
Yeah, it's a complete waste of time. We should be on daylight. We should be on standard time and get rid of daylight savings time. Uh-huh. And yet the politicians would like to see us go back to a permanent daylight savings for some people.
Yeah.
It's a waste of time. Every time you turn the clock back or forward, you have an increase in motor vehicle accidents. You have an increase in a heart attack and stroke. You have more incidences of medical complications in hospitals because people are making mistakes because of the change in their sleep cycle.
Yeah.
So you have patients that are suffering in hospitals.
That's right. Sure. You know, there's a bill right now in Congress that would, you know, do just that, basically keep daylight saving time permanent. And the bill was sponsored by Marco Rubio from Florida. He's a senator there. And I think it's also being opposed, though, by the American Academy of Sleep Medicine and the American Medical Association,
exactly,
because they say that it messes with your circadian rhythm. What are your thoughts on that?
Circadian rhythm, yeah. You can get circadian disalignment. There's all sorts of things that neurobiological problems that occur by shifting the sleep back and forth twice a year. It will be best if they follow the American Association of Sleep Medicine recommendation and get rid of daylight savings time permanently.
Yeah.
And there are a number of states that have done that already, you know, like Hawaii. Actually, Florida is one of the states that got rid of it. And Marco Rubio is from Florida,
right,
which is kind of odd when you think about it.
That's so true. All right, we'll grab a few calls. 888-914-9149 if you're having sleep problems or issues. Boy, you're lucky. Today we've got one of the best sleep experts on. Dr. Lou Tartaglia is here. We'll take your calls and questions regarding sleep. And Amy in Miami, Florida, speaking of Florida, joins us now. Amy, hi. You're on the air with Dr. Tartaglia.
Yes, hi. Hey, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
And congratulations with your show. It's always an excellent show you present.
Thank you, Amy.
So I have
Thank
a quick A quick question. When you go under anesthesia, you go to the hospital, they're going to do a procedure, the elective procedure, and they put you under anesthesia. Is that count as rest, sleeping, or does something different?
I don't think anybody really knows how to count that. You're sleeping, but you're under all kinds of stress because they're manipulating your body, they're cutting into tissue, and they're operating on you. So there's a lot of variabilities there. The real issue is post-op, what happens. Post-operatively, people run into problems because they have trouble with their breathing after they have the operation. And then if they're in the ICU, they get sleep deprivation, and then they're awake in the middle of the night. And it only takes a few days of in the ICU to really disrupt your circadian rhythm.
Yeah, Amy, thank you very much for that call. I appreciate it. It's a good question. I never thought about that before. You know, doctor, speaking of anesthesia, she's wondering if you get a good rest out of that. I think you're right. Maybe you don't. What about the Ambiens, the Lunestas, the sleep aids? Do they differ than the melatonins, the Valerians, the kind of herbal remedies to that?
Yeah, there's a big difference. And one of the major differences is the fact that it hits this GABA receptor site in your brain. So there's a potential for addiction. There's a potential for dependence. And then there's a potential for, as you get older, for falling and having accidents when you're on these medications.
Wow.
The best treatment to start with is always cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. And there's all sorts of programs out there where you can do the program online. Yeah. And then you practice the techniques. Yeah. And over the course of many years, sleep gradually improves.
Okay.
The long-term outcome for CBTI over 5 years is better than the long-term outcome using medications. There's a whole class of newer medications that hit the orexin receptors and block orexin. Orexin is the wake molecule, and if you block it, you sleep better. And they seem to work better than the sedative, the
Ambiens and the others. I know quite often people sometimes don't have memory, or you know, it's foggy. Do these new meds allow you to remember? People do things under. I had a guy call me on the air one time. Says, "Yeah, I took an Ambien. I went to bed. Next thing you know, he's being pulled over and he's being given a DUI in the middle of the night." And he says, I'll never take him again. I didn't even realize it was driving the car. People will eat. People will have sexual relations. They'll do all these things sometimes under certain sleep aids because they affect everybody differently. Do the new meds operate under a similar type of...
It's a completely different receptor that it's blocking. It's actually even safe for alcoholics.
Wow.
Alcoholics can't use the sedative narcotics because it stimulates the urge to drink. And the newer medications are safe for alcoholics, which is really great.
I was on a flight one time sitting next to a doctor, and it was a long flight. He was traveling overseas. I was flying overseas as well. And I saw him take something to go to sleep. He said, I'm going to go to sleep now. And he popped this. I said, oh, what is it, an Ambien, a Lunesta? He says, no, it was a Xanax. Does that operate differently than an Ambien or a Lunesta, or is that kind of the same type of thing?
It's different and similar simultaneously. So it affects the GABA receptor, but because it's a benzodiazepine, like Valium and some of the other drugs, alprazolam, what happens is it actually has an effect and makes apnea worse. So it's not as safe as some of the hypnotics.
Interesting. Yeah, dangerous stuff, too. People mix it with alcohol, you know, very, very dangerous stuff. All right, we'll take a few calls. If you want to get in, it's 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. If you're just joining me, we are taking a look at sleep. Do women need more than men? What about your phone? What about your nightlight? Are there strategies to help you fall asleep and stay asleep? So much to get into today. So if you have a question or you're struggling with this, feel free to dial in. I often think, too, that as you age, it almost seems you need less sleep. But I remember, like, high school, I had to take my daughter to the airport last week, right? So we're up out really early, and I'm thinking, I see the school bus at 6:30 in the morning or something like that, and I'm thinking, man, in high school, you know, kids need their sleep, and they go to bed late, and now they're forced to get up early. What about sleep as you age? And should we move the start time for school for kids? Would they be better at school? Would their academics improve if the school day started later?
You know, they've tried this. And what happens is the kids delay their sleep time on the weekends. And that's really the big problem. If they went to bed 7 days a week and got up the same time 7 days a week, they'd have a lot less trouble. Yeah. But because they go to bed later on the weekends, you run into all these problems. Yeah. So what they did is they did a couple of communities where they delayed the start time at school. But what happened was the kids stayed up even later on the weekends, so it really didn't make much of a difference.
Wow. And as you get older, you know, so when you're a teenager, I feel like you need to sleep 15 hours a night, right?
At about 13, you need about 9 to 10 hours a night. Wow. At 17, you need 8.5. At 25 and after, you need 7.5. And you should get the same amount of sleep all the way through, even when you're in your 70s and 80s. However, often what happens is the elderly will sleep a little shorter at night and take afternoon naps. And that's very healthy.
You know, you talk about disturbed sleep, too, and I do want to get to the phone calls, but my mind's racing right now. I think about a lot of friends who I know now are going on CPAPs, right? Does that mess with your sleep? It's better than having it sleep apnea, right? But does that disturb your sleep?
No, it actually improves it significantly.
Interesting. Very interesting. All right, well, let's do this. Let's go, and we'll grab phones. I know how busy these phones are and how busy we will be here as we go through it all. Let me start in, Austin, Texas. Tony's been waiting the longest. Tony, good afternoon. All right, Tony's not there. Let me go to David in Chicago. David, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew.
Hey.
Hi. We've called in before for prayers that saved my life. I had a heart attack back in when COVID started, and I was in a coma for a month.
Wow.
When I came out, it was, Relevant Radio prayed me back to life. You and Sean Tierney helped get me back.
Oh, God bless him. Sean's a great doctor. He's a wonderful cardiologist.
Yes, but I was calling about melatonin. What does the doctor think about melatonin? Because I use a CPAP, but I have trouble falling asleep. So my routine, I need a TV on, whether I'm watching it or not, and 10 milligrams of melatonin.
That was a lot of a great call, David. First of all, thank you. If you see Sean Tierney, tell him I said hello. Let me ask you about melatonin, because, you know, I thought you shouldn't be. Yes. 10 milligrams seems like a lot of melatonin. That can make you dream, right?
That's generally what I prescribe.
Oh, really? Wow.
Well, yeah.
You tell I'm not a physician. I try to stay less than that. I think, man, 5 milligrams or less.
Yeah, no, if you're going to take it, you may as well take a nice dose. But here's the bigger issue. Melatonin is supposed to be taken when your salivary melatonin levels are rising. Nobody bothers to check those. Okay. So the most important thing is to make sure you get into bed the same time 7 days a week, and then take the melatonin between an hour and an hour and a half before you get into bed. That's the most precise time.
Yep.
The problem is a lot of people stay awake later on the weekends,
right,
and then you never know when you're supposed to be taking the melatonin.
Gotcha. Interesting. That's right. What about valerian? That's the other natural remedy people take.
Another good remedy, it's okay to take that. I don't use it. I don't actually tell people to take it, yep, but a lot of my patients do.
Interesting. All right. Well, we're talking sleep. Let's go back to Tony. Where's Tony? Tony's in Austin, Texas. He's been holding a long time. He's back. Tony, good to have you back with us. Good afternoon.
Can you hear me?
I can, yeah. Welcome.
All right. Hi,
Tony.
Hi. Well, I was calling because I was wanted to ask. I was diagnosed with narcolepsy about 2013. Started off with having to take stimulants for daytime sleepiness or sleep attacks. And over the years, I started taking Xyrem, and now I'm pretty much off of having to take any stimulants. With the Xyrem at night, I get a full night's sleep, and I also use a CPAP for sleep apnea.
Yep.
And I can't tell you, I can't express how having narcolepsy was like being a zombie. I realize how sleep deprivation is a way to hurt people, because my life was horrible compared to now.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to get your opinion about Xyrem and any thoughts or other information you have to share. Thank you.
Sure. Xyrem is one of the most amazing drugs ever created. It's the sodium salt of the date rape drug, GHB. And what it does is it normalizes sleep during the night, which helps with your wakefulness. It increases slow wave sleep. And during the day, it increases wakefulness. So a lot of patients will come to me after they've been started on Xyrem and say, "You changed my life. I can't believe I got my life back." One of the things, though, is they've come out with Xywav. I don't know if you know that. And it's the low-sodium form of the Xyrem. And so if you have a history of hypertension, a lot of people switch to the Xywav. Dose to dose, it's the same, except that you're not getting the same sodium load. And it's really an amazing drug because there are five big symptoms for narcolepsy. There's the excessive sleepiness. There's sleep paralysis, where you wake up and you're stuck. You can't move your body.
Mm-hmm.
There's hypnagogic and hypnopompic hallucinations, which are dreams that don't turn off or turn on too suddenly. There's nocturnal awakenings. And, of course, there's the excessive daytime sleepiness. And the Xyrem and the Xywav affect all five symptoms, which makes it a really remarkable treatment. Before we had a Xyrem, we really didn't have anything that could affect the cataplexy the way this this medication does. So it's a really great drug.
All right, my guest, Dr. Lou Tertoli. Thank you, Tony. I appreciate that. Yeah, he's talking about CPAP, too. What about these implants? Are they giving... Is there an alternative to somebody who can't sleep or has apnea? What about implants, some sort of surgery?
Implant technology is quite interesting. What they do is that you have to have a BMI that's less than 35, because if it's above 35, your throat collapses side to side.
Wow.
You have to be scoped. They have to look down your throat to make sure your throat, when you have an apnea, collapses front to back.
Yep.
And you have to have an apnea index above 15.
Okay.
And below 66, and they put a pacemaker in your chest. They run a wire to your diaphragm, and then a wire to the nerve in your tongue. And so when you start to breathe, it sends a little shock. It feels like a little tickle to your tongue, and the tongue protrudes forward and opens up the airway.
Okay.
And a lot of patients who can't tolerate the CPAP get referred for. Inspire implant technology.
Wow.
It's a very interesting process. It's a long procedure to get to get everything in place to do it.
Wow, the technology is a wonderful thing, isn't it? Constantly evolving.
Yes.
Doctor, let me do this. I'm going to take a short pause. If you are on hold, I'm going to get you on the air. We're speaking today with sleep specialist Dr. Lou Tartaglia, and a lot to get into. Are you a night person or an early person? You know, your night owl or a morning lark, as they like to say. What impact does shift work have on your sleep? Maybe you just can't fall to sleep, or maybe you wake up. Are there strategies to falling asleep and staying asleep? We'll look at that and a whole lot more. Feel free to join the conversation.
Hey, today we'd like to thank Carlos, who's listening in Texas, for donating his Nissan. And you can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles by visiting relevantradio.com/car.
Spring forward 1 hour at 2 a.m. and it's going to, of course, impact the sunrise. Sunrise will be a little bit later, so it'll be darker earlier in the morning for longer. But the sunset will be later as well, so we'll have more daylight on the back end.
Welcome back to The Conversation. You're listening to Drew Mariani on Relevant Radio.
And if you're just joining me, we're talking sleep. Don't forget to turn your clock up this weekend. That means Sunday morning when it's time to go to Mass. You're like, oh my gosh, why am I so late? Right? You're going to move that clock up. Don't be late. And get your rest because you're going to need it when you mess with the clock. It does throw your, I don't know, it throws your mojo off, right? It's sleep's so critical for your health. Good sleep, they say, improves everything from brain performance to mood to your physical well-being, even weight loss. We should talk about that too. How does sleep affect weight loss, right? It's a big question. I was reading a little bit earlier today about a researcher from the University of Colorado. He's a sleep expert. His name's Dr. Kenneth Wright. He says, look, getting a good night's sleep, it will improve everything from blood vessels to the immune system, right? He says lack of sleep regularity, he says, it raises the risk of a lot of different diseases and disorders, including, as you heard Dr. Tatalia point out, heart disease or stroke or dementia. See a lot of that as well in obesity. But there are lots of reasons we don't have good sleep. Caffeine and alcohol. You might have deficiencies in key nutrients, the use of electronic devices before you go to bed, or even exercising before bed. So love to have you join us. We'll get back to the phones here in just a second. The number to get in is 888-914-9149. And we will take your calls, your questions, and your comments. And Dr. Tartaglia is not only an expert in sleep, board certified in psychiatry and neurology, but he's also an author. And Doctor, you and I were talking during the break very quickly, and we put a plug in for your book as well. You said it went to number one on Amazon. Why don't you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, what happened was, I guess a lot of people listened to the show and ordered The Last Gift of the Magi. And then the day that the book was released, there were so many orders for about 6 hours, it was number one in two categories, religious historical fiction and spiritual gifts.
Wow.
And so Amazon put a big gold seal on it saying number one.
Yeah, you're working on another one, so we'll have to talk about when that comes back. Get another number one seal for you. I love it. Last Gift of the Magi, if you haven't read it, and the author is...
Oh, you know, and it's getting traction with people in recovery.
Really?
I keep getting people calling me saying it's helping with their recovery from alcohol and drugs.
Well, it's really unusual. Talk about just... I want to get back to sleep, but very briefly, what is the book about? The title's a little deceptive.
Yeah, it's about a camel that wants to discover his purpose in life and discover his inner potential. And so he goes on a caravan because you go out into the desert if you're a camel, and he winds up with the Magi to visit baby Jesus.
Yeah, great story. That's awesome. And it's helping people in recovery. Check it out. Hey, let's jump back to the phones here as well. Again, this is not a Christmas book. I just want to make sure people are aware of that, right? It's so people
it's
know,
really
right?
It's a self-help book.
Yeah, it's a self-help book, so people know. Teresa in the City of Brotherly Love, thanks for waiting. You're on the air with Dr. Tartaglia.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. My question is for the doctor, as part of your initial evaluation of a patient, do you always ask them about their physical activity during the day, if they're able? I think for some people, the simple answer is move more during the day. If they're at a job that requires them to be seated all day, or if they just sit in front of the TV, of course they're not going to be able to sleep at night. And then there's weight gain, which could potentially cause a need for a CPAP machine. So I'm just wondering if some people, it's not a question of needing a drug, it's just a question of move your body more during the day.
Right. We always ask about exercise and activity. And the average patient that comes in that has apnea, their activities have decreased dramatically because they're so tired. Yeah. And then the other thing is there's a hormone that allows you to sleep full that's made while you're sleeping. So God put a hormone during sleep. If you sleep a long time, you make more of it. You get full faster, but you awake less. So you eat less. Yeah, wow. And if you sleep short, you make less hormone. So you eat more, but you're awake more and you need more calories. And what happens is when you get apnea and you sleep the same amount of time, you don't make the hormone. You start to gradually gain weight without really overeating.
So if that's really fascinating. So if somebody has sudden weight gain or can't lose it, it might be linked to their sleep, but they may not even know that they're waking up multiple times a night with apnea, right?
Exactly.
Wow. Exactly.
And over a 5-year period, most women gain 25 to 30 pounds when they develop apnea, and men gain 50 to 60.
Whoa, that's a lot. Wow. So you would recommend then just a sleep study if you think that this might be your problem. Or if you are married, your spouse can certainly tell you whether you're waking up or not. But all right, we'll go back to the phone. You know, before I go to the phone, somebody sent us a tweet here, and I do want to get it on the air. They'd asked about nurseries where they play white noise. They want to know whether those sound machines, you know, give you the sound of the beach or nature or whatever it is, or even just white noise, is that healthy to listen to while you're asleep?
I have no idea. I've never seen any research that's actually looked at the white noise to see what it is on sleep. Because you have to run a sleep study without the noise and a sleep study with it. And that's the really cost prohibitive to do that.
Gotcha. All right, we'll go back to the phones. Faith is listening in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi, Faith. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm kind of nervous, but I'm trying to condense it. I've had restless leg syndrome for 30-plus years, and I was diagnosed with apnea 5 years ago, sleep apnea. I've tried a lot of different medications, and I get side effects. The iron levels have been checked, and they're okay. I've developed health issues now that I assume are from sleep deficiency, and I'm frustrated to find a doctor that can help.
Okay.
Yeah, so restless leg is one of those disorders that is really disturbing to patients. Of all the sleep diseases, narcolepsy is the most severe, but the most upsetting to the patient is usually restless legs. And there's a lot of research on it. We're getting away from ropinirole and Mirapex and using Horizon and gabapentin, and we're doing more iron studies to make sure that the ferritin levels are at an adequate level. Yeah. It runs in families, so we see lots of families where multiple people have the disorder.
Thank you for your call. I hope it works out for you there, Faith. Brian in Tallahassee has got a really important question. We talk about melatonin. We've been talking about valerian. We've been talking about prescription meds. He's got a question, I think, about CBD, very popular recently. Brian in Tallahassee, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew, and thank you, good doctor, for this important topic, obviously. So I've got a CPAP. It changed my life about 7 years ago. I'm not really overweight, but it's just been a life changer, not just for my health, but also for my marriage. But my question is kind of two-part. You know, there's melatonin, some of those. I don't know if you can take those for too many periods of time, but what about, like, CBD oil? I see that's a big craze, and some people even as THC gummy bears, if those are those things helpful? And then I've got a follow-up, if I could, if you answer that, doctor.
Yeah, okay. So the research is just starting to occur on THC because the same blends that improve sleep, some change mood. So that research is ongoing. It's probably going to take another 3 to 5 years before we have a handle on just how effective some of the components are. CBD oil seems to be relatively safe. It's kind of pricey. And I still am a big fan of doing cognitive behavioral therapy because the more you do it, the better it gets. And the five-year outcome seems to just be so much better than medications.
Well, if I could also ask just a follow-up to that. So I occasionally have the situation, get up at 4 a.m. and then have trouble going back to sleep. And on a recent visit with my sleep study nurse practitioner, she suggested, you know, if you can't go back to sleep, get up, read a book, watch a movie, the whole movie or a show, and then try to go back to sleep. I usually start praying a rosary, a memorare, you know.
I think the rosary is a much better suggestion. You know, think of it this way. Okay. If the devil woke you up and you start praying the rosary, you're going to be allowed to go back to sleep. But if God woke you up to pray for somebody, you're going to stay awake and pray your rosary.
That's great. And Brian, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. And such a good point, too, because if I wake up in the middle of the night for some reason, the rosary is like an insomniac's cure to me, especially in the middle of the night. You start praying that, the repetition of it, the concentration. I find myself falling asleep and saying, oh, wait a minute, I still have 4 more Hail Marys to go. And then I start praying again. And I realize, you know, you're out because, you know, you're coming and you're going out of this whole thing. But it does put you to sleep and you realize that. Is there something to that, the repetition of that prayer, the forced concentration? What is it that puts you back out?
Yeah, plus you're in the bosom of your mother.
Amen.
You know, and
what child doesn't like to be held by their mother to go back to sleep?
Amen to that. You know, sleep paralysis. I'll go back to the phones, but you see, some people wonder about dreams at night, sleep paralysis, different things. Dreaming in general, you know, what is it? Is it a good sign when we dream? And what about nightmares? I had read Father.
No, it's essential.
Okay, I'll let you address
that.
Dreaming
is absolutely essential. That's where you consolidate memory and you process stress. So if you notice, when children have their nightmares, it's always the first REM period, about 90 minutes after they fall asleep. So the first REM period is always a nightmare. And then the dreams get better as you go along. And then the last REM period at the end of the night is usually quite pleasant. So dreaming is essential. And it's really important.
All right, let me go back to the phones. We could talk for a couple hours, you and I. Sacramento, California is next. Marissa, thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you, Drew, for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have two really active children, and I'm reluctant to give them, like, melatonin or any, like, medication, but I wanted to know if there's any alternatives that are natural that you think would help remedy their sleep, because they have difficulty sleeping throughout the night. And so, like, I've done, like, giving them a bath to help soothe them, you know, before they go to bed, and they're constantly running around throughout the day, and so they're really active, but they still have a hard time sleeping throughout the night. So that was my question.
Right. Just a couple of things that you need to make sure. They're going to bed 7 days a week the same time. Don't get lulled into thinking it's okay to let them stay up a little bit later on the weekends, because for every hour they stay awake later on the weekends, it takes a day for their circadian clock to come back to normal. The other thing is feeding children, especially something like warm milk, helps them fall asleep. Adults, if they eat before bedtime, don't sleep as well, but children do. So it's okay to give them something to eat, a snack or warm milk and some crackers or something before they go to bed. I generally don't recommend the melatonin because we're not sure what the melatonin does for children. Yeah. And there's some questions about whether or not it's safe to use in children.
But melatonin is a hormone, right?
Yeah, it's a hormone that's secreted by the pineal gland. And it increases your sleepiness. Okay. And then it shuts off after your body temperature drops all the way down around 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning.
Patrick in Austin, Texas, thank you for joining us. Good afternoon.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So my story, I suffered a tragedy which led to insomnia, which led to literally a month straight of maybe an hour or two of sleep a day. And so my doctor, whom I trust, he's my family doctor, prescribed Ambien. And I was on that, and it worked about a night or two, but how it worked was, and I may be wrong about this, Ambien to me was just a knockout drug. I mean, it the doctor even said, look, take this, go straight, get in bed, and you're out. And I was. And but then it didn't work consistently. He kept upping the dosage until finally I was addicted, but and had to get off of it. But I question, it wasn't a restful night's sleep where you wake up the next morning and you're like, oh gosh, I'm all rested. There was no REM. It was basically you were just, it knocks you out and it puts you asleep.
Right.
So, but is that healthy?
It should only be used short term. And yeah, there is a potential for getting addicted. And if you keep increasing the dose and it doesn't work, and you're not falling asleep in 15 to 20 minutes, it's better to just stop it. Remember, it's a sedative hypnotic, which means it knocks you out. It doesn't really affect the level of REM that much. It increases a little bit the stage one sleep, so you fall asleep a little bit faster. But after a psychological stress, it would be better to work with somebody for to process the post-traumatic stress that's causing the problem with sleep and to do CBTI, cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia.
All right. Thank you, Patrick.
Well, let me just follow up. There was a scary part to it too, because one night I didn't fall asleep. I sort of fought through it. I didn't fall asleep, and I had a conversation with my brother. I did all kinds of things, and the next morning, I didn't. Any of it.
It
was a really scary side effect. So,
right, that's a real problem, and that's a sign that the medication needs to be stopped.
Yeah, like I said, Patrick, I had a guy who called the air, says, I took one to go to sleep one night, he says, and I was out. Next, you know, the police are pulling him over, and he ends up in jail. He got a DUI. He's trying to fight that because he wasn't driving under the influence. You know, he wasn't drinking. He wasn't high. But he was on Ambien, and so you know you really need to have you need to talk this through, I think, very carefully with your doctor. And to Patrick's other point here, doctor, maybe you can follow up on this for me. Ambien's and Lunesta's, the prescription stuff, does it get you down into that deep REM, or does it only get you to a certain level of sleep? So you're not getting the restoration that seemed to evade Patrick.
The sleep pretty much stays normal, pretty much, but. There are no medications that really increase REM sleep. There could be a couple, like the new orexin antagonist. They sometimes increase REM, right. And they work better. But here's the issue. Yeah. When somebody's sleepwalking or sleep talking or sleep eating, they need to be worked up for restless leg syndrome because it's more associated with restless legs than it is with insomnia.
All right, doctor, hold the thought. I had to take a short pause. As I say, time is the enemy. These breaks come pretty quickly. When we come back, we'll jump into more telephone calls. It's our final segment with Dr. Lou Tartaglia addressing sleep. Programming is sponsored by St. Gregory Recovery Center, helping you or a loved one live a substance-free life. Information at relevantradio.com/Gregory. That's relevantradio.com/Gregory.
Keeping you better informed, educated, and inspired. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. Hey, just a quick reminder for you. Daylight saving time underway. Turn your clock up this Saturday. Right, we'll be flipping it forward. You're going to lose an hour of sleep when you spring up. And we're talking today just a little bit about how that might impact you. You know, sleep is so critical, as we all know. But for individuals with Alzheimer's or dementia, daylight saving time can cause sleep issues that can further exacerbate those symptoms and their conditions. And we're just looking now at ways to help you get that good night's sleep, whether you are struggling with it now or you're concerned about somebody you love. And I've invited today Dr. Lou Tartaglia, who is one of our nation's, I think, best sleep doctors. He joins me today to answer your questions. You can check him out. He is a full-time sleep medicine specialist and board certified both in psychiatry and neurology, and deals there at the Toledo Sleep Disorder Center Sleep Laboratory in Ohio. Doctor, time goes quick. We only have a few moments, so we'll dive back into the calls. A lot of people very patiently waiting. Ricardo is in Alhambra, California. Hey, Ricardo, you're on the air with Dr. Tartaglia.
Hi, doctor. How are you? I'm a 51-year-old male, and I don't have trouble sleeping. My head hits the pillow 10, 15 minutes, and I'm gone. But I do have a question. I don't recall any of my dreams, or if I even dream, for that matter. Is that something that you come across often? Is it normal?
I rarely ever have any patients that don't dream at all. I think I've had two in 20 years where we did a sleep study, we did repeated sleep studies, and there was never any REM at all, without apnea. Some people with apnea can't get into REM, because the apnea breaks up the REM. But most of the time, it's just a matter of people haven't trained themselves to remember their dreams. Because while you're dreaming, you're writing to the hard drive. You're writing memories. And so while you're writing to the hard drive, you can't remember that you're remembering. I don't know if that makes sense to you. It's like trying to write something on a file while you're saving the file. You can't do it. A lot of times people have trouble remembering their dreams.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Ricardo, thank you for it. I appreciate it. I don't remember a whole lot of my dreams, but I'm going to try to do that. I thought so often, I mean, maybe if your alarm goes off, you wake up, you remember your dreams because you're disrupted from it. But how critical is it that we remember our dreams?
It's not critical that you remember your dreams. It's critical that you have the dreams. Yeah. I did Jungian analysis when I was in psychiatric training. So I got trained on remembering my dreams. Okay. So I remember them all the time.
Is there a strategy? I think it's kind of cool. I mean, how do you remember your dreams?
As soon as you wake up, you have to have a pad and pencil and write down the fragments that you remember. And that triggers the process. What happens is you get stuck doing other things and you forget them right away.
All right. Well, that sounds good. My guest, Dr. Lou Tartaglia. Doctor, before I take more calls, I just want to make sure we leave people on a positive note. And what I mean by that, if someone is struggling with sleep, you know, some warnings and some advice. And the warnings, you're the expert, so I'll let you expand on that. But I know they say you got to stay away from blue light. One of my colleagues here says she turns her phone black and white. So, you know, her iPhone or whatever it is, she takes the color off it so it's black and white or maybe even red. She's, I don't know how you quite do that, but she took the color out of the phone so it doesn't keep her up at night. But a lot of people watch TV, they're on their tablets or they're on their phones. Some people sleep with night lights on. What are some of the don'ts, you know, in terms of you shouldn't do before you go to sleep in order to get a good night's sleep? And what advice would you give to those who are listening as well to make sure they get a good sound night's sleep?
Yeah, so you want to go online and get some information on good sleep hygiene. There are a lot of simple techniques. You want to go to bed about the same time 7 days a week. You don't want to have too much stimulation before you get into bed. You don't want to have the TV on because the advertisements get louder and they tend to wake you up. You don't want to overeat too close to bedtime, and you don't want to drink too close to bedtime. And you want to practice relaxing yourself so you're in a state where it's conducive to falling asleep.
Right. Temperature, too, is big. I mean, a lot of people get these foam mattresses, and they're super hot now, and they're wondering why they're not sleeping, or the heat's up too high, or you have too many blankets on. What about room temperature and noise as well?
Yeah, dropping the room temperature 2 or 3 degrees during the night usually helps people sleep a little bit deeper. So dropping it down to 68, 67 degrees often helps.
Yeah, so a cooler room. Okay, makes sense. All right, let me grab another quick call. Kevin is listening to us in San Clemente, California. Hi, Kevin. I'm going to put him back on cue. Patrick, was that you? Rita in Wisconsin. Good afternoon. Rita, are you with us?
Oh, yes, I am.
Okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to mentioned that this works for me. A few years ago, I read an article in one of the medical journals that seemed too simplistic, but I tried it. Mm-hmm. Here you go. You go to bed and you get up in the night, like I do have a problem. It consists of 4 or 5 very deep breaths.
Yeah, right.
Now, the procedure is that you open your mouth as wide as you can, and you take time in between each breath. Now, so that I am sure that I'm not hurrying it, I usually use an ejaculation in between, you know, like my Lord and my God, then I'll take
That's
the next
beautiful.
Breath.
Rita, I got to hold you there because I only have about 30 seconds left, but I love that. Deep breathing, doctor, meditation, that type of thing, how does that work?
Yes. It causes you to relax and let yourself let go of your tension and stress.
Yeah, well, doctor, thank you for being here. Hey, my apologies to everybody else on hold. I wish I had another hour to spend with you. Cale Clark is coming up, though. You can hang out with him. And, doctor, we look forward to your next book and the next time you and I get to talk. Thanks for making time for us today.
It's called Return of the Cloth, and those that have read it will know why.
I love it. Can't wait. All right, that was Dr. Lou Tartaglia. I am out of time for the day. I will be back again soon. Until then, I'll be praying for you. Please pray for me. Have a great night's sleep.